Sounds of protesters reacting today to the announcement that Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak is stepping down. Those sounds are still going on, and they're being broadcast by Al Jazeera English, which has been lauded for its 24/7 coverage of the protests and criticized by people who say they're fanning the flames. Let's take a closer look at the network. Here in the U.S., millions of people have tuned in online since Al Jazeera English is only available on American cable TV in Toledo, Ohio, Burlington, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. The network has now launched a campaign to convince cable providers to bring them into more markets in the U.S. But how has their coverage of Egypt been? And in fact, how has Egypt's fledgling journalism been? Lawrence Pintak is dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. He's also author of The New Arab Journalist, Mission and Identity in a Time of Turmoil, and he's taught journalism at the American University of Cairo. And Lawrence, as some of us know, you're a journalist yourself.
CBS Middle East correspondent back in the 80s.
There you were. And joins us now from Northwest Public Radio in Pullman, Washington. What did you think when you suddenly saw everyone finding Al Jazeera English on their computers in the past few weeks?
It's a good thing to see. Americans have, our worldview has become more and more constrained over the years. And Jazeera English, we can talk about all the different issues about it, but certainly Jazeera English brings a whole new worldview to the American public.
Al Jazeera itself was founded 15 years ago, Al Jazeera English in 2005. Many might remember when American reporter Dave Marish raised some eyebrows by joining it because the thinking was it was going to have a pro-Arab world, anti-Israel in particular, slant.
Jazeera English, its strength and its Achilles heel is the fact that it has the words Al Jazeera in it, because Jazeera Arabic certainly was the channel we love to hate from the White House under Bush. And the Bush administration did a very good job in creating a certain image of Al Jazeera in our minds. It was anti-American. It was pro-Osama bin Laden. Whether or not all of that was true, whether any of it was true, the fact is that Jazeera English is a very different organization. They answer to the same master, ultimately the Emir of Qatar. But it really does run along the lines of a Western news organization. And you mentioned Dave Marish. He's just one example of lots of American, Australian, British journalists from around the world.
Well, and we remember with Al Jazeera, the Arabic version, this would be where Osama bin Laden would send his tapes and they would air them. And so there was a lot of question there. But tell us more about your sense of Al Jazeera English and its sense of journalism, especially as you've been watching its coverage of Egypt.
Well, let me say one thing first. Jazeera Arabic certainly wears its Arab identity on its sleeve. And certainly in the lead up to the Iraq War and the period thereafter, it was showing its audience a very, very different view of what was going on. Many would argue that it's sensational, that it emphasizes the dead babies, etc., too much. Jazeera English was set up not to be a voice of the Arab world or to speak to the Arabs, but to be a voice of, as they put it, the global South. And so it brought together this amazing polyglot of nationalities, from Malaysians to Nepalese to Africans of various stripes to Westerners. And so at some level, it's bringing a kind of a cross-border journalism that doesn't speak from the particular viewpoint of America or Britain or the Arab world.
Well, in fact, some colleagues who've become addicted to it now have said, gee, the other night I saw a documentary on the deforestation in Latvia or a documentary from Al Jazeera English on a coal mining family in Virginia. So it's not as if they are, you know, you might think that they just have cameras focused on Cairo. They have a much broader perspective. But when you say they're not specifically speaking to the Arab world, the accusation is, from leaders in the Arab world, that they've been fanning the flames in Tunisia and Egypt. When you look at it, do you think that this is not acceptable journalism?
No, I think their journalism, Al Jazeera English's journalism, has been excellent on this story. They've been very measured. And in fact, their people on the ground have, when anchors in Qatar or in London have asked them questions, kind of leading questions, they say, no, we have to be very careful. We don't know that yet. So they have done a spectacular job. But Jazeera Arabic, the difference is that there has always been a perception that Jazeera Arabic is anti-Mubarak. And so from the perspective of the pro-Mubarak forces, they are fanning these flames. And certainly you can draw a direct line between the creation of Jazeera in 1996 and this uprising, because it was the first pan-Arab satellite channel. It was the first chance for Arabs to see something other than that produced by government-owned TV stations. Now it's the first among many.
But what about Jazeera English? Because this wall-to-wall coverage is being called their CNN moment. The Kansas City Star published a guide, you know, the easiest way to get Al Jazeera English. Is this going to be sort of a tipping point to get Jazeera English onto more TV stations in the U.S.?
Well, if I were Tony Brunton, the former managing director who's now in charge of getting it out in the air in the U.S., I'd be opening a lot of champagne bottles. I think this really does begin to break the ice for them in the U.S. When you have, you know, there are ads they're running now quoting Sam Donaldson and people like that saying, thank you, Al Jazeera English. And that really does begin to shed this idea that they are Al Jazeera Arabic and that they are the devil incarnate.
But what happens, as you mentioned, it got its start when the new Emir of Qatar wanted to put his country on the world stage, and so he bought a failed Arabic service and gave these journalists the reins, and he's been funding it. But these are popular uprisings that are threatening to spread across the region, maybe to Qatar.
Well, I would love to be a fly on the wall in the palace in Qatar at the moment, because certainly when the Emir first created Jazeera Arabic in 96 and plopped $50 million on the table and hired a bunch of out-of-work former BBC Arabic reporters and said, okay, go get them, boys. He didn't do that because he wanted a membership at the National Press Club. He did that because he wanted to be a player in the region, and the Saudis dominated the regional media. So suddenly he has a voice, and he said, go get them, boys. Shake up these other countries. Shake up my rivals. Well, whether this was ultimately what he wanted is another question. In terms of what the journalists wanted, I think this is. We did a survey of Arab journalists a couple of years ago across the region. And if I ask you, what do you think the mission of American journalism is? You're probably going to say something like reporting the news, informing the public, uncovering malfeasance. Arab journalists, 75% of them said the mission of Arab journalism is to create political and social change. And we're seeing that in spades today.
And Lawrence, 75% of Arab journalists believe their mission is to create political and social change. And again, you're dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. You've taught journalism at the American University in Cairo. You were a reporter there. So you all know there are activist journalists here in the U.S., but 75% in the Arab world, that's big. What happens when they see fomenting social change as their role?
Well, I mean, if we rewind a couple of hundred years here, does the name Tom Paine mean anything? You know, we had many, many activist journalists who were driving the American Revolution. And in many ways, the political atmosphere in the Arab world is in the same kind of state that the colonies were then. You had what we saw as tyrants ruling us and what Arabs see as tyrants ruling them. So while part of me as a journalist and many journalists might cringe at this idea that the majority of journalism would be activist and seeking change like this, if you put it into the context of Arab society, it's not particularly surprising.
Well, and you taught for years at the American University of Cairo. You taught graduate journalism. Do you see also a clash on the horizon? Because you've, as you said, you've had traditionally state-run TV. And we saw this fascinating story in the past week where one of the beautiful anchors from state-run TV had a Hosanna moment and quit and joined the protesters on the street because she saw, wait a second, I've been working with an entire, I mean, I can't imagine what that feels like to realize that you've been telling lies for a government. Well, she left and she joined the protesters on the street. Tell me about that sort of clash that might be on the horizon between these traditional journalists who've been working for the state and newer ones.
Well, I mean, for a start, we see this anytime there's a revolution, don't we? Those who are working for the state broadcasters suddenly see which way the wind is blowing and have their Hosanna moments. I don't think they wake up and suddenly realize, oh, I've been lying. I don't want to lie anymore. But where is my bread going to be buttered in the next 6 months? I think that part of that comes in there.
But, Lawrence Pintek, it seems also that their reasoning is sort of a parallel reality of the new journalist. In other words, their reasoning is we have to maintain order. That's the role of a journalist. We're with the state. You say the new journalist says we have to be part of creating change. Neither is a Western way of approaching journalism.
No, absolutely. But by the same token, literally a few minutes before we walked into the studio, I was talking to someone who used to work for the Voice of America and who ultimately quit because a story he was doing about Agent Orange in Vietnam never got on the air. Well, yeah, what a surprise, right? Mm-hmm. So this isn't completely alien to our context. Yeah. And we find that while the majority of Arab journalists are looking for social and political change, certainly there are those who genuinely defend the old order, and there are those who are working for government channels and newspapers because they don't have a whole lot of choice at the moment, but really don't like what they're doing. And when they finally get a chance, they move on. And we saw this just the other day, Al-Ahram, the government-owned, party-owned newspaper, the mothership of all government mouthpiece media operations in the Arab world, its editor-in-chief said, okay, it's time for change.
It's just a moment where they flip their editorial stance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you hearing, by the way, from any of your former students in Cairo?
I have this plethora of students who are out there on the street covering this or are part of the demonstrations. So I'm getting this constant flow of direct message tweets and Facebook postings and emails, and watching this line between journalist and political activist and how different people approach it. I got something this morning from one of my students who has been shooting tape for TimeMagazine.com. And so he's out there shooting, but then he kind of puts his camera down and he goes out and takes part in the demonstrations. And another one of my former students, I emailed and said, are you covering this? And she said, no, I decided that I can't be objective about this. Hmm. I will be a part of the protest.
Huh. Fascinating. But by the way, did you, was one of your former students the tweeter Sand Monkey?
Yeah, Sand Monkey, not a student, but he was involved in a USAID-funded project where we took a half dozen of the leading bloggers in Egypt and brought them to the U.S. to learn about the U.S. election process. So they were here in the lead-up to the Obama election.
Of course, he's been a Twitterer people have been following. But what do you tell them, Lawrence Pintek? You know, as you said, one student says, geez, I can't be both a reporter and a protester. Another says, I can. Do you say to them, no, you can't?
Not my place. Not my place. All we can do as Western journalists is to expose Arab journalists, Arab journalism students to Western mores of journalism. So here's the way we do it. Now you decide how you're going to do it.
Yeah. Because so many of these journalists and these kids on the street who are picking up cameras or cell phones and becoming instant reporters had been trained in different ways in the U.S. You mentioned USAID programs. Does the vice president of Egypt have a point that a lot of this is foreign influenced?
No. This is grassroots. This is long, long simmering anger, frustration, humiliation. You look at this core of activists who are using digital media to organize. I mean, these are, for the most part, well-educated kids who now can't get a job. Then they're incredibly frustrated. And then you plug into that mix the average Egyptian who has been struggling to survive. I mean, there are many, many, many Egyptians making $2 a day. The minimum wage in Egypt is $7 a month. So there is an amazing level of anger. Did the involvement of organizations that helped to train them to use social media tools help to speed this process? Sure. And would this have happened if we had not seen the Tunisian revolution? Absolutely not. But this is a homegrown uprising.
And what about Al Jazeera English? Do you think that its rise is directly connected to the decline of Western reporting in this part of the world?
Oh, absolutely. All three of the major, in quotes, American networks closed their bureaus in the Arab world in 1985. And when I got the call and I said, wait a minute, are we moving somewhere else? No, we're not going to be based in the Arab world anymore. The Marines have left, meaning the Marines that had been in Beirut. We don't need to cover the Arab world anymore. Mm. And we as American news organizations have absolutely abrogated our responsibility to cover the world. NPR is one of the few organizations that actually has a presence overseas. The New York Times, few people from the LA Times, and you quickly run out of names. So the Al Jazeera Englishes and other organizations like that are beginning to step into that void. A colleague of mine, another ex-CBS person, was saying to me this morning that he's been listening to the CBS hourly newscast, and he's not hearing CBS correspondents because there are none. There are two CBS correspondents left outside the borders of the U.S.
Wait, two? CBS? Are you serious?
Count them, two.
Outside of the borders of the U.S.
Based in London. It was brought down to about a half dozen. Most of them were on freelance contracts of 50 or 100 days a year, and those have now been dropped. So what we're hearing on the CBS newscast are Al Jazeera.
Lawrence Pintek, Dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University, also author of The New Arab Journalist, Mission and Identity in a Time of Turmoil. And he was a former teacher at the American University of Cairo. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.